It's a lovely diagram he's got there.
I'll explain this then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you do it?
Yes.
Did you?
Yeah.
Artist in the making, eh?
Well, I have a woman who does my drawings for me. I send her a drawing and she makes it look pretty.
Oh.
But what I do is I take incredibly complex things and make them simple, because that's better for me. and because I make them simple, I take all the steps out of it. So if something has 13 steps and everybody says, oh, it takes 13 steps to get from there to there and it's at least 5 years, I think, why? Why is it? Why does it take five years to get there or whatever?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not training to be a doctor. I don't dissect your brain. I don't do any, you know, I don't do brain surgery or anything. and I know how the brain works probably better than most brain surgeons, who could tell you which bit of the brain they could operate on and what it does.
Yeah, the physical.
But can't tell you how to actually mend yourself. Right.
Yeah, well, it's
so
just the mind.
When
it?
I read things, I'll read all these big technical words in it, and I have to have a dictionary at the side of me and sort of work out. But all I'm looking for from anything is the concept. And most of us have read a book about something, and you read it, and it sounds very interesting, and you get the point after about three pages. Come on in, I haven't started yet. You get the point after about three pages, and then they hammer it to death for 189 pages, don't they?
Yeah.
And I think, well, that could have been a one-page book. Because you don't have to keep convincing... If you convince me, if you tell me something that convinces me, you don't have to tell me 189 times to actually get it in my head.
You've got the point.
So what I tend to do is look at things, read lots of things, read lots of different things, and then I combine the two ideas. So I take one concept and I blend it with another. Let me take a couple of chairs. So, for instance, although I'm a trained hypnotherapist and I also trained in energy and motion, and the idea of energy and motion is that when we have bad feelings, we tend to change our body shape. So, you know, should we get everybody doing this?
I
haven't started yet, but... okay, can I get everybody to do this? What I want you to do is think about the happiest thing you can think of, okay? Just think about the happiest thing you can think of. And now what I want you to do is try and remain happy. Come on in. It's all right, I haven't started. try and think of the happiest thing you can think of. And now I want to change your body shape and do that. Right? Okay? Try and remain happy while you're doing that.
Remain happy?
Yeah, try and remain happy while you're doing it. You can't, can you?
Yeah.
Okay, now think of something miserable. Come on in. No, I haven't started yet. Fine. Think of something really miserable. Right. Now, while you're thinking that miserable thing, I want you to do that. Okay? Just open your shoulders and everything else. Okay? Try and stay miserable. Nobody follows instructions. You can't, because what we're doing... Come on in, I haven't started.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, this is a pre-session. okay, so your body shape adapts to how you feel. And you can change that in an instant. So if you get a telephone call, you know, it's your son, we're expecting a new baby, you go from normal to, wow, you know, and the whole body tingles. Because everything that you hear, every cell in your body hears. Right? And including self-talk. So when we go, I'm a disgusting person, it goes, yes, you're a disgusting person. And it only goes into that. And the idea of energy and motion is that when we have thoughts that affect us, it turns us into this sort of... But it's not as vivid as I'm showing it.
No.
It actually goes inside and lots of bits tense up and things, and this is why we get ulcers and all sorts of bits and bobs, because we tense bits of a body up. And the idea of energy in motion is, although you can get the brain to switch off that muscle thing by get rid of the problem, and then it switches off those muscles, you can do it the other way around. You can actually have a go with the muscles and release it from the muscles, which then has a different message to the brain. So it doesn't need to store that rubbish anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, come on in. I haven't even started yet. so it lets go of it.
Yeah.
And you can do it from either direction. Mm-hmm. So it's a really nice thing. And just recently I've studied mesmerism. Which I don't know if anybody knows about it, but it was the sort of forerunner for hypnosis. And so what they did was big sweeping movements where they ran the hands past you. And it fell out of favour because it was heavily linked with clairvoyancy and lots of other things. And it was usually practised in what they called mental asylums. Come on in. And so it was people of weak will, they called it, or feeble minds. And because they were, it worked on them, it was sort of like they were open to this sort of suggestion. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it sort of fell out of favour, because it was like, as soon as they realised hypnosis could bring on the same effects that mesmerism did, they said, well, why do all that sort of passing of hands and all this if you can just sort of swing a watch and people go into hypnosis? So it sort of fell out of favour. But hi, come on in. No, I haven't even started. You're not disturbing me at all. Come on, I haven't started yet. And still 10 minutes to go. So if you link the two with what I've just told you about the body and the way it feels and how it tenses up, mesmerism was actually working on your aura and things like that. So it was doing this thing of energy. And if you put two people together and you put them in close proximity, you can feel energy. I mean, it's not a spooky thing. It's how we all work. Come on in. It's all right. It's wonderful how people do that. I'm small enough. I haven't even started yet, so you're fine. So it's not you that's late, it's me that's early. So I worked out that mesmerism was actually the best of both worlds. It combined these two things that I've only just come across and that people have had separately to now into this old-fashioned idea that died out. So it took a bit of finding out about it because it dates back to the 1870s or something. But it's really fascinating now I've got there. And it's actually teaching me about hypnosis as well and putting different concepts into my mind. So that's why I do all that.
It's interesting because when my son was a baby, he just wouldn't stop crying. He was always scrunched up and everything. There's a last-minute thing. I can't remember what it's called, though, but we took him to some place in Kermington and he just sort of didn't touch his head, but like that. And after the third session, he was a calmer baby. And when he first went, he'd just be scrunched up and he couldn't move. And then by the third session, he was moving. It was strange to watch it.
It's a strange thing that everybody thinks that illness is either mind or body. And they can't be. It's got to be a combination of the two. You can't have a physical illness without having the mental process that actually puts it there. Because your mind's in charge of your body. So every day you're breathing in and out, and have done since the day you were born. And your heart's done the ba-dum, 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 sometimes faster, sometimes slower, since the day you were born. It's running all these systems. It does absolutely everything for you, which is the talk I've got today, is how much it does for you, and how little your conscious brain does. It does so little. It's just amazing. Shall I? So the passing of hands and things is just amazing. And we're all made up of energy, so it's just involving other people's energies. And the reason that things like I do work, although you can do a lot of it yourself, sometimes it's this authority from outside of you that has more influence. So, for instance, if you go to a doctor and he says, right, diagnosis is you've got 6 months to live, you will die in 6 months, even if he's got the wrong notes in front of him, because every cell in your body hears, I'm going to die, better go home and prepare my will. And the body starts to go, well, we've only got 6 months to go, starts shut down. Okay, so if that can happen, just the opposite can happen. If somebody gives you hope, suddenly there's the old stuff, the doctor got hope now, you know. And I've got a friend who's been alive for about 8 years now after being told he had 6 months to live. Mm-hmm. And he's just got a better diet and looks after himself more and doesn't put himself under a lot of stress. And just keeps going. In fact, I think they probably cut his benefits off if they realised that he was still alive. Okay, so, hoping not to cover any of that back over again. For everybody that walked in while I was talking, I actually started a bit earlier, but with different topics, so you're absolutely fine. So don't think you disturbed me because you didn't. Okay, so thank you, everybody. such a good turnout. You're a lovely audience, so much better than last week. No, I can't say that. This is the first talk I've ever given for BSSK. And there's some method of giving feedback about talks. So I do hope you give me some good feedback at the end, because that means they'll let me do another one. Okay? Right, so today's topic is, I'll have to remind myself now, transform your life on automatic. And all my themes are very similar to each other. And like I said earlier, I'd like to explain things quite simply. So the more I studied this, and the more technical things I read, the simpler it gets. Because I keep just looking at all these concepts and saying, oh, crikey, that's how that works. Mm-hmm. And when you understand the brain, it's even though actually nobody really understands physically how it works, or why it works, or how it can pass a message down there to there and do it in the language that you learnt when you were a kid. Mm-hmm. Nobody understands that. Come on in. Nobody really understands that. But the way in which the brain works happens with such regularity that you can actually predict what it's going to do and how it's going to work. And I didn't bring any cards or anything, but if you go on my website, which is thethoughtcoach.com, so it won't take too much remembering, is I've actually listed 11 different ways that the brain works that actually affect how you take things on board, why you have problems, why they keep recurring and so on. So today's about how to actually run on automatic. Well, the great news is you're already doing it. So if we were to consider this as being the way the brain works rather than the actual physical size of the brain, in this room would be your unconscious. This whole room would be your unconscious. If your conscious was in here as well, it would represent probably my little finger. Right? So when we think we're clever, we think we're clever with our conscious bit, because that's what we do our thinking with. But in reality, it's your unconscious that's running you. So for instance, I'm not consciously thinking of everything I'm saying, so rubbish might come out in a minute, but it's coming from my unconscious, because I've rehearsed this so many times, and I've read so many things, and I've learnt so much, that it now goes, well, I'll do that. Okay? Now, 80% of everything you know about life, you learnt before you were six. Okay? So a bit of maths for you all here, because I can't do it for you, is I want you to think of your age. I want you to take 5 off it. Okay? That's how old 80% of the way you think about life is out of date. That's amazing, isn't it? Okay? More amazing for some people. Okay, so if you think about all your thought processes, the actual conscious brain holds nine bits of data. Now, you don't have to be a computer technician to understand that 9 bits of data is hardly anything. So if I now read out my phone number to you a single digit at a time, and then carried on talking, you could either remember my phone number or listen to me talking, but you can't do both. That's how little fills up your conscious mind. So the rest of it comes from your unconscious. And your unconscious it was programmed when you were born, so it runs your heart and lungs and everything else. It does all your health, your temperature, your pH levels, the whole thing is just run automatically by the unconscious part of your brain. So like I said earlier, I'm not going to get technical and say which part of the brain, because I never remember which they are. But if you see the brain as running in two ways, the really small conscious bit that you're in charge of, and the unconscious bit that sort of does it on its own. And it does it on its own because, first of all, it was programmed to be like that, so it knows all about your body and that, and as soon as you're born, that's it. It runs everything. But then we learn things. And if you understand that 80% of it comes from before you were six, so 80% of all our lessons about life were actually shown to us by somebody else. They weren't things that we experienced or whatever, apart from walking and talking probably, but even with that you were encouraged and aided and things like that. And as with most things in life, if you actually fell over when you were walking, your mum didn't say, that walking's not for you, mate. She went, pick you back up on your feet, shook you, and off you walked again. So everything that we've ever done, there's always a first time of doing it. And we have that sort of naive feel that, oh, nobody else feels like this, and oh God, this is terrible. And it doesn't matter what age you are, if you're doing something for the first time, you feel like that. Because you've consciously got to think about it, or you might have to read the instructions, and you all feel a bit silly. And I've got a doctor friend who's a brilliant doctor, and actually assesses other doctors for fitness for practice. And when I chat to her, she is so naive about lots of things in this world, because she hasn't come across it, because she spent all the time focused on becoming a wonderful mum and a wonderful doctor. And some of the things I talk to her about, I think, well, everybody knows this, kid at five will know this. And she'll go, what's that then, Stephen? And this is one of the most intelligent people I've ever met. Mm. Right. So everything we have to do new, we have to sort of somehow get it in there. Now, when we repeat it enough times, we then pass it over to the unconscious, and we go, you get on with it. So for those of you here that drive, when you first got in a car and they went, right, I'm going to show you how to change gears, and you get sat there and you go, okay, I'll put the clutch in, right, okay, now put it in gear, okay, and they go, right, now you've got to let the clutch out, but at the same time you've got to press this one down, but not too much. Come on in, fine. And you go, and then he goes, mirror. And you go, mirror, I'm doing this and this, both at the same time. And you feel like it's impossible to do that, and mirror, and steer, and do all the other things. But now you get in the car, and you put it in gear, and you just do that, and you're not even aware of it anymore. And we do lots of things while we're in that state. So when I talk to people about hypnosis, for instance, they'll say, oh, you can't get me in hypnosis. And I'll go, you've been in a trance today already. I can guarantee you every single one of you have been in trance already today. Because we drift between these states. So when you read a book, you actually, when you open it up, you start reading words on a page. Within a moment, you're actually in the story. Somebody comes in the room, says your name, and you're out of the story, back into the room. Okay, yeah, I'm busy. And then you're back into the book. As soon as you read the next line, you're back into the book again. You're not reading words. All that's automated, right? So that all runs for you. So what we have to do is, and I'll get over to this now. So this is my idea. This is my concept. This is baggage reclaim. So we've probably all been on holiday where we've handed in the cases at the airport. And then you go on your flight, you get to the other end, and you have to go and fetch them back again. So this is everybody's mind. We have loops of things going on. And it runs on a constant thing. And the idea is that we have things called associations. An association is something that triggers you off to remember something else. So, for instance, a little old lady walks past you in the street, smelling of a perfume, and suddenly you're thinking of your auntie, who wears a very similar perfume, and it's instant. You don't have to think about it, you don't have to go, oh, smell, little old lady, auntie, smells a bit like auntie. You're actually thinking, why am I thinking about my auntie? And it's not until a few seconds later you think, ah, that woman went past who smelled like that. Right? So we've got all these associations that we have. And on your baggage reclaim, everything that is uncompleted, every bit of hassle you had in your life that you haven't put to bed yet, is still there. And it runs around on this conveyor belt, okay? And anything comes up similar, and it goes, oh, crikey, yeah, you don't remember that. And it adds it to it. So if you can imagine, all these are different things. So let's talk about relationships, for instance. So every bag on here is yours, all about different things. And so we have an association, so I've got a female up here, so I'll say a partner says something to her that's quite rude or hurts her in some way. What happens is, she doesn't just react to what he said. And us guys don't understand this, we go, I only said that. And you're in the doghouse for 2 weeks, and you think, I only said that, I can't remember. And you try apologising, and it doesn't work. Because what's happened is, she's now fetched the relationship bag off the conveyor belt, opened the lid, put this new thing